This is Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping. With your hosts, William Whitebread and Mark Audio Slave Stewart.
Welcome to another episode of Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping with me, Willie Whitebread, and
Mark Audio Slave.
And we have a very special guest this evening, Mr. Renegade Rick Lane.
Say hi, Rick. Where did that come from?
I don't know, I just made it up.
My life is dog shit.
No, we're not doing that.
Can't take you anywhere, man.
Can't take you anywhere. So this week's episode is an episode that's a little bit naive to me. So that's why I brought Mr. Renegade Rick Lane over. We're doing it on metal. The history of metal. The different subgenres, all 400 fucking 1,003 subgenres of metal. Right?
Yeah, the heavy metal, the grind metal, the stoner metal.
Yeah, the plaster metal. Yeah, the plaster metal, the screwdriver metal.
Yeah.
The cup metal. All the metal.
No. Math metal's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Or like Nintendo Core. That shit's pretty legit. Yeah.
Nintendo Core.
Dude, it's not even a joke. That's like legit shit. It's like 8-bit metal.
8-bit metal?
I know. The 8-bit pedals are
literally
big,
all you
thing.
Do is you just pick a word and add core and an X in it somewhere, and that's a new genre of metal.
Yeah.
That's how they do that.
But they have those 8-bit guitar pedals these days.
Mm-hmm. The Bit Crushers?
Exactly.
Oh,
those exactly.
Are fun.
Yeah, they're fun.
It sounds like an old Nokia game.
It's the same thing as a ring modulator.
They do different things, though. Like, you can switch them to do different types of 8-bit crushers.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's get into it.
You can.
Let's talk about the origination of heavy metal, where it all started, right? And that would be in England.
With Black Sabbath?
It would be with Black Sabbath. Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Blue Cheer, bands such as these.
I can't argue with that.
Right? And it's interesting enough about these bands because they pulled a lot of their music influences, not like a lot of American musicians during that time period, that they were all playing blues, right? They were all riding the blues train because that's where the blues was happening.
Correct.
You know what I mean? You weren't getting many blues records out of England.
Well,
right?
Yeah. A lot of guys were influenced by it. Like, you look at guys like Clapton.
Yeah.
Like Tony Iommi from Sabbath. I mean, you start getting into the blues with that because that's all metal is.
Right.
It's blues really loud and really fast.
Right. So. Right, right.
And noodly guitars.
But like every other genre, some group of people is going to get sick of listening to it and they're going to want to listen to something new. They're going to want to play it harder, faster, stronger, you know, something like that.
That's Daft Punk. That's a whole different thing.
Deadmau5.
harder, faster, stronger.
Right? Yeah, harder, faster. Or Kanye, you know, whatever.
He was over his head.
Maybe a little. I don't know.
Harder, faster, stronger was a Daft Punk song.
Oh, groovy. That's great.
Yeah, and then Kanye sampled the shit out of it.
Oh.
Which is still a good song.
And that's over my head, so.
Yeah. That sounds like something Kanye
I could be
West
back for the gangster rap episode, too. I get down like that.
I don't know if we'll do one of those.
Hey.
Hey, man, some of that shit's
you
pretty fucking
know.
Metal. I'm just saying.
You never know.
Yeah, right. So anyway, going back to late 60s, early 70s, we're running with the English heavy metal movement, Black Sabbath, like we mentioned before, their 1968 album, self-titled Black Sabbath. That was something that was the first of its kind. Nothing had really been heard, you know, in the genre for that.
And that would probably be classified today as more of a stoner metal, I would think.
You think?
Know?
Well, no.
Because it was a lot of it was kind of slowish and sluggish and
sluggish tempo.
It started like what led into like the stoner. The stoner started getting like super heavy fuzz and
The huge
a little
fuzz.
Outlandish. They were more like the progenitors of doom, but you can actually go even further back, like what is it? Cavan's always going off about it. I Want You, She's So Heavy by the Beatles.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Great song.
If you sit down
great
and
song.
Listen to it, I hate the Beatles.
I love that song.
But that song is getting into that same, that doom, that dark pulling from mythologies of not, you know, pro-Christian
faiths. Right.
And it's, you know, it's like, shit. It's hard to pick anything, but yeah, Sabbath is probably my favorite to blame it all on.
Yeah, they would definitely be, and especially with them in combination with Deep Purple. And, you know, when you think heavy metal, you can see it in Sabbath. You know, you can absolutely see it all day long in Sabbath with the, like Mark said.
Well, then you get into Blackmore's guitar playing.
Right.
From Purple, and you're just like, okay.
Yeah.
That starts to sound even more like Sabbath was kind of on the edge of something, and then Blackmore just kind of kicked it over.
Right. And I love a lot of their influences, too, because what I was getting at a little bit earlier was that the I'd say the vast majority, if not almost all, of the American musicians were heavily influenced by blues at the time. That's what they were playing, which was great. You know, it was fantastic. But, you know, over in England, they wanted something a little bit different, and their influences were slightly different. I mean, they had a little bit of blues in there, a little bit. You can see the licks in their, you know, in their guitar playing. You can
pentatonic everything.
Pentatonic all the things.
A minor.
Right, right. But like, especially with Black Sabbath and their Black Sabbath song, it was based on Gustav Holst's Mars. That was his compositions.
A heavily what they call the, I believe the technical musical term is the Diabolus in Musica, the flatted fifth tritone.
Right.
Which, I mean, that's the whole main theme of that song.
Right.
But
and how interesting that must have been, because, you know, when we see metal throughout our times, you know, you're a big metalhead, Rick. So how many times in the last, I would say maybe 10, 15 years, have you seen a band or heard a band that was like, shit, like blew your fucking socks off, I've never heard anything like this before?
It's rare.
Right.
I mean, everybody starts to kind of run together after a while, and you're just like...
But it does happen. It does happen every so often.
Every so often.
I think when I... Like, the last two bands that I can say that did that for me, when I got introduced to Tool...
Right, yep.
Which...
Back in the early 90s.
We had that conversation earlier.
We'll get into that conversation later as well.
When I got introduced to Yob.
Yob.
Because, like, it's a whole different style of metal.
Yeah.
And, you know, you think metal, you think fast. You think super technical guitar lines and tight pants and crazy hair. And these dudes are just, they look like a bunch of hippies and they're heavy as fuck.
Right.
So it's just, but, like, that was like, I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Right. Right. And it's another movement away from, like we talked about, it's another movement away from what was happening at the time. Because you got to think what was big musically in the 60s. It was the hippy dippy movement. It was the Jimi Hendrix. It was the Janis Joplin. It was the Feel Good, Jefferson Airplane, Peace, Love, Rock and Roll, Baby, Grateful Dead. That's what was big. And that was that heavy
blue influence. What about the 70s? What happens then?
Well, I mean, we move into, I mean, Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, and Deep Purple, Blue Cheer. I mean,
they move into the 70s.
You could even throw Hendrix into that metal mix, because when he started towards the end of his career, when he started really incorporating like the super heavy fuzz and getting into those crazy ass freaking solos.
Well, he got bored.
Well, I think Hendrix was definitely the first one to do the fuzz, you know, be notorious for the fuzz pedal, I would think.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
But let's say Black Sabbath was the first band to go like, you know, like
dark
anti-Christian type dark music, you know, and that's what gave them that dark, you know,
aura.
Metal, you know, the whole aura.
Even though the band, they are Christians, they are good people.
Right. Well, I didn't
so is Alice Cooper is believing that too. Yeah.
To be Christian doesn't mean to be good. To be non-Christian doesn't mean to be bad.
Well, I look at Sabbath the same way I look at like Manson nowadays. It's a character. You're putting on a show. You're a performer.
Yeah, but you know, you're putting on that character, but then you can't just go like, oh well, I'm gonna throw on my Sunday best and go to church on Sunday. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'm gonna put an inverted cross on my album. But guess what? Praise Jesus.
Have you not been on Facebook in the last 20 years?
Yeah.
Oh my God,
the hypocrisy.
But
on this
is
man.
Way back in the '60s, man. You know, you know,
this was the shock rock.
It was shock.
Oh, definitely,
very
was.
Shocking to them.
This was shock rock,
especially, you know, with Tony down tuning and the band, like, you know, we were talking about it earlier. They started off as a jazz band, so you can especially their drumming, you can hear it.
Now, isn't it true that the guitar player lost his fingers,
two fingertips?
And then that gave them their unique guitar sound.
Well, he plays like 8-gauge or lighter strings, and then he tunes down because that way he has like prosthetic fingertips.
Yeah.
So he can put full pressure on the strings and play properly.
That's super interesting, though.
Yeah.
And, really, of course, you know, Gibson SG.
Yeah.
Best fucking guitar ever.
Best fucking guitar on the market.
Debatable. Anyway.
Nobody asked you. Shut the fuck up.
I want to know something real quick before we bounce away from Black Sabbath. Have you guys ever heard about the curse of Tony Iommi's guitar?
No.
That
you guys
I have not.
Ever read about that? No? So my dad actually brought this to my attention. And apparently there's been like two or three separate occasions where Tony Iommi's guitar has been stolen. And each time that Tony Iommi's guitar has been stolen, it's been returned to him. Because something absolutely terrible happened to the person that stole it.
Never heard that.
Yeah. That's like cool. One guy got
that would
like,
be the rock gods looking out for him.
I think so, man. Right. Some gods.
Yeah.
some you know, diatomy.
Fucking Valhalla, the Viking god of metal, is up there like, no, this is not happening.
Yeah. Odin's like, nope, not today, motherfucker. Nope. No, so yeah. So his guitar gets stolen, and one guy got like hit by a bus. Yeah.
Fucking Annabelle of a guitar is over here.
I was going to say, please tell me it was like the tour bus for like the Partridge Family, because that would have been the funniest shit ever. Yeah. You ruined metal, fucker.
Yeah.
It was wholesome family music death.
The Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh, jeez.
Fucking ran him over finally.
The fucking Brady Bunch.
Near, splat.
Yeah, so I thought that was super fucking interesting, and I read into it a little bit, and it's actually true. Every single time Tony Iommi's guitar has been stolen from him, it's been returned to him.
You know, that he might be an Egyptian god at this point, then. It's very... The jackets, the hair, I don't know.
Hey, well, he could, too.
All those rituals they probably did in Sabbath, I mean, in the early days, probably stuck with him.
Hanging out with Aleister Crowley.
Yeah, Mr. Crowley. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, Mr. Crowley. You know, Jimmy Page, all over there hanging out with Jimmy Page. You know Jimmy Page bought his house? Aleister Crowley's house.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Fucking crazy.
That whole band was into some crazy shit.
Yeah.
Fucking people with fish.
Yeah, you had you had to sell something to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That's like Joe Perry sold a bunch of his early Gibson Les Pauls, and then Slash bought them, and then Slash felt bad for him and gave them back to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I watched one of Slash's documentaries.
Something, one of those I saw.
Yeah.
That's an underrated motherfucker right there.
Underrated? Slash?
No, Joe
Perry.
I was about to say, Slash isn't underrated.
You look at most of the guitar gods nowadays. You get guys like, oh man, Zakk Wylde, of course, you know, Hetfield and stuff like that. Slash kind of, like, he did the Velvet Revolver thing, it never kicked off, but he had so much potential to be up there.
Right.
Like, he's like a rock demigod.
Yeah.
Where, honestly, had he stuck and got a decent enough group around him and not, you know,
well, he was super on Guitar Hero. Right. He was on Guitar Hero, yeah. Rick.
That doesn't, I it's can't funny play that game.
We're talking about Slash because last night, a guy that I work with bartending, he used to live in L.A. He's a bartender in L.A. And he said that Slash used to do a lot of stuff in the studio across the street from his bar. And so Slash would come in and like he would have a one-on-one with Slash all the time. And I was like, dude, that is so fucking cool.
God damn.
And he says he's a real down-to-earth guy, man.
Top hats and nose rings, man.
Yeah, but he's a real down-to-earth, cool, you know, laid-back cat. Yeah.
Just you know, if your vocalist could quit dropping the N-bomb in songs, you'd be good to go. You know?
Yeah.
Right.
And then he eventually turned into Eminem, but...
Yeah. Well, another band from back in those times, 1968, we're talking about 1968, the birth of metal along with Black Sabbath and Zeppelin and all those guys. A band that I didn't really look too much into in the past. I'd heard them before, but a band called Blue Cheer. They make a rendition of the Summertime Blues.
Never heard of them.
Which is heavy. It's real heavy. And I was like, you know, you listen to this song and you're, in comparison to... you know, whatever else was playing back then, you're like, dude, this is fucking heavy for this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Like, I was never, like, a big, big fan. Like, I didn't really get introduced to them. Like, you know, I grew up, like, 80s metalhead. Mm-hmm. So some of it you didn't get introduced to. But, yeah, you go back and listen to that stuff.
That's when metal got commercialized and monetized, and that was actually the, you know, the early 80s, late 70s. That's when it blossomed.
Glam metal.
All the different metals, man. So moving forward from there, you know, obviously Black Sabbath, Zeppelin, Purple, Blue Cheer, those guys were heavy, heavy influences. That was the heaviest thing around.
So are we going from the 70s to the 80s right now?
No.
We haven't even hit the 70s yet.
We haven't even finished the 70s because in the late 70s, the British keep on going. Okay. Iron Maiden and Judas Priest.
Budgie.
Okay. Yeah.
Rob Halford.
Fucking, you know, the early origins of bands that would eventually become like Motorhead and shit like that. Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Lemmy,
man. Yeah, two fingers to the sky.
That's the rest in power right there.
Yeah, yeah. And so with Judas Priest, they were very interesting. They were very interesting because Rob, nobody was doing what Rob was doing back then either.
Oh, no. No, it's almost inhuman that he did it.
Yeah.
Like, I watch him sing and it hurts my throat. I mean, death metal bothers me, but those highs?
Yeah.
It's...
Well, he has a gift.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. His vocal cords are definitely unique to the whole metal scene.
Yeah, and he kind of, that's when people started kind of getting concerned, and I say people, and by people I mean mothers and parents and that you know, those kind of folks, uncles and parents and whatever. Mm. That's when the family dynamic started getting a little concerned about what their kids are listening to, because you put a Judas Priest album or an Iron Maiden album out, and you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Because
nobody was singing that high.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but the lyrical content, what they were writing about at the time wasn't exactly something, you know, you brought home to family either.
The Christians were going crazy during those times.
Oh, they were just getting warmed up. 80s.
Well, you know, and then the 80s when Scorpions came out with the Virgin Killer album, and they had the you know, the naked chick on the front, and they were going nuts on all.
Yeah, but see, when I think of anything, we're going to get into the whole how do I put it politely? The Christian Family Coalition's boycotting music. Then you get into like the big four, the main four bands from the '80s: Slayer, Anthrax, Megadeth, Metallica.
Yeah.
Mainly Slayer.
Yeah,
because they're amazing.
Now, is it true that Slayer's name stands for "Satan laughs as you eternally rot"? I heard that years ago. No, back in like the early
90s. Would be funny as fuck.
But that's what my buddy, hardcore metalhead, told me that's what it stood for.
Well,
but
that's like the freaking Kiss thing with the kids in Satan service or whatever.
Okay.
Or AC/DC was always Antichrist Death Child. I'm like, no, it's voltages. It's really weird, but it's science.
I mean, alternate like current.
I don't know, man. That kind of shit used to kind of irritate me. Like, Kiss kind of irritates me.
I'm not a fan.
Not a fan.
Yeah. Like, I catch a lot of shit for it, and everybody's like, but I will give them credit for one thing.
Their makeup.
Well, no, that's you can laugh, but it's the truth. They created an image, and, like, between them and the Misfits, it's almost hard to tell who's got their face on more merchandise now.
That's very true.
Gene Simmons got a hold of it. You could get Kiss anything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the Misfits are close, but nobody has, like, you know, you don't get Misfit collector dinner plates like you'd get for NASCAR shit. You don't get Misfits fucking, I'm sure you'd get a Misfits cock ring.
You could have a whole fucking room filled with Kiss memorabilia.
Yeah, and then that's
And I
just,
know people that do that, as well. Yeah.
I used to jam with a drummer, like, every year for Halloween, his kids and him dressed up like Kiss. I'm like, dude, you have daughters. That explains a lot.
Yeah. Why does little Christina look like Paul Stanley right now?
Their makeup is definitely iconic.
And I think that's kind of where it was, their stage presence, because I think they, you know, they kind of brought that huge, you know, stage.
They're larger than life.
Yeah, they're theatrics.
Yeah, and technically, for even though they were more of a rock and roll band, that part of them was metal.
Yeah.
Because they went, and when they're like, hey, we're doing this, fuck you.
And nobody else did it.
No.
Yeah.
Nobody else did it. I mean, maybe Gwar.
I always got shit from my mom because, like, you know, I grew up in the early Manson phase. Like, you know, Antichrist Superstar, stuff like that. And then my mom, I'd look at my mom and be like, you listen to Kiss. Leave me the hell alone.
Yeah.
I grew up in Portrait of American Family.
Yeah, you know. So. And they're a Florida band, so I'm always going to rep, you know, my local music.
Right.
So it's like, yeah.
And I've talked about that before where we'll get to that in the goth episode. We don't have to start that.
In the
that
goth
now.
Well,
episode.
I mean, you can still, because of some of the way their songwriting was, they were still almost like metal-ish.
They had a lot of metal.
Especially their early stuff with, Daisy?
They really are metal, but I mean, you know. So who, I want to know.
Once I got John 5, they went metal. I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
That dude's sick.
Who came first, Alice Cooper or Kiss? Alice Cooper.
I think it was Alice Cooper. It
has to be Alice Cooper.
Here, let's make sure we get that right. Because Alice, they were doing, you are right. Because
I would
Cooper
say he's the godfather of the shock rock.
Yeah.
You know. And
School's Out, I think that came out in 72.
Early 70s, yeah.
I think. I definitely early 70s. Definitely early 70s. Well, maybe even 60s, because that motherfucker's old. I saw him probably 4 or 5 years ago with Motley Crue. Wow. He was fucking like 69, 68
years old. You're talking about the arena.
Was he still playing with Nita Strauss?
I don't know.
Yeah, that he did tour with her on that.
She is like one of my favorite guitar players to watch.
Fucking best Ibanez player, I can fucking tell you right now.
I think it's her and what's her name? Nikki Cox? It's not Nikki Cox. It's not Courtney Cox, I don't think. It's something Cox, but I think they do the Iron Maidens together.
Sucking Cox.
It's like an all-chick Iron Maiden tribute band, and dude, they are amazing.
Well, Alice Cooper dropped his first album in 69. let's see.
69. Little Ministry throwback.
Wow. I didn't know we were quoting the Bible.
But yeah, Alice
Ministry,
Cooper,
the band.
Ding, dang, ding. Oh, well, no, Psalm 69 was the name of the song.
Yeah.
And so, Jesus Built My Hot Rod. I mean, they're a very Christian band.
So Alice Cooper was first. Alice Cooper's first album was in 69.
Oh, so Kiss, he's definitely.
Yeah, Kiss's first studio album was in 1974.
So I would think that Kiss got the idea, let's dress up. You know, from Alice Cooper. Like, that's what sells shit. Let's dress up.
Yeah, because Alice Cooper was doing wild
shit. Paint some potato chip shits on my fucking eyeballs. Let's do it.
I got a snake, man.
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
I'll put some blood fucking in my mouth and shit.
You know my friend Jake the Snake Roberts, man? We buy from the same snake dealer. But so, yeah, Alice Cooper was, he was bringing shit to the table that nobody else in that time was bringing to the table, right?
Yeah.
And he was around the same time as Black Sabbath was, but that was, you know, obviously America's version.
I mean, he
of Black Sabbath.
Alice Cooper had guillotines on stage. He had oversized puppets coming on stage. You know, the makeup was on his face.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he
was kind of like a proto Gwar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Precisely. Best metal band ever.
Yeah, and when
my first concert. That's my first concert I've ever seen.
Gwar was your first
concert? Gwar was my first concert.
Holy shit.
I woke up in the next morning, and my mom...
That explains a lot,
My mother was... She was taking us to the Thomas Edison Museum in Menlo Park in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And she wakes me up. She goes, time to get up. What happened to you? And I had, like, you know...
The white t-shirt?
Oh, the white t-shirt, and it was the blood and on my face and on my shirt. Nice. And I'll never forget, because after they performed, they came out as their alter ego band. It was called the Bad Cops or something Cops band. Mm. And they had different type of blood. And when they sprayed the blood on my face that time, it was darker. Like, it was real, like, goat blood, or I don't know what they... I mean, I don't know what they use, but
it was
different than what they use on the Gwar settings.
Intestinal tract infection blood.
But that was, dude, after I saw that first concert,
you've got
I was
AIDS.
Hooked.
I saw Gwar with Lamb of God.
Mm, that was here in Jacksonville?
No, I saw them in Orlando.
Okay, yeah, because that same tour came here to Jacksonville, and like one of my exes was like, oh, got tickets. I'm like, I hate your face.
Yeah, it was years ago. And my first concert happened to be Slipknot when I was 14.
That's pretty badass.
Yeah, it was their the Jägermeister
Rick,
music
what was
tour.
Your first concert?
Shaft, Anthrophobia, and OBC at the Fat Cat right
on
up the road.
To the next episode.
Yeah.
That's a Anthrophobia is like, they're neat. They're like, they were that weird.
Now, was this a weird touring rock. Bands or
Anthrophobia was Shaft and no Shaft so was as well and like, OBC was local.
What was your next Chaos. What was your next concert, you remember?
Fuck.
Fuck.
Because my next concert was in Giant Stadium with fucking Faith No More, Guns N' Roses, and Metallica. That
if I
was,
say it, I'll probably get I was probably 14, made fun of.
I was 14.
Like, yeah, it was Green Day and My Chemical Romance at the arena.
That's cool.
That's
and
cool.
I was
cool.
Actually impressed by My Chemical Romance.
Gerard Way, man. He's pretty
but my favorite
too.
Part was the fact that the girl I was dating at the time, she knew it was right after American Idiot dropped. I don't want to have that conversation again.
But, I saw him on Dookie.
I knew everything prior to that album. I hadn't heard anything off of American Idiot yet. So I'm just like, I'm singing along with everything else. And she's singing on along with all the new stuff. And at some point, they stopped some song, brought some 10-year-old kid on stage, and Billy Joe let him walk away with the guitar.
Wow.
While playing the song with the band. And I'm just like, that kid is never going to be able to produce children because his testicles have just, like, exploded all over the front of his pants.
Yeah. Well, he's probably make a wish anyway.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to be a piece of asparagus.
that was one of the last
albums.
I don't
want to be a Canadian hosehead.
Yeah, that's one of the last albums I ever actually purchased in a store.
So let's get back to what we were talking about here. Are we?
Yeah, they're not metal.
We're cruising in the mid-70s
really,
now?
Yeah,
or?
They're really not metal. Mid-late 70s, so the Judas Priest, Iron Maiden train, that kind of rode out for a little while. And then I guess the U.S. started being like, hey, man, what the fuck are those guys doing over there? They're making some pretty heavy shit. I think I'm going to make some pretty heavy shit, too. Because then you get into the Sunset Strip explosion out of L.A.
Mm-hmm.
in the late 70s.
Motley Crue.
Yeah, that's right. So Van Halen released their debut album in 1978, and that kind of set up the scene for the L.A. Sunset Strip scene.
Okay.
You know, because you had your Van Halens, your Quiet Riots, your Motley Crues, you know. And then it was all downhill from there, but I think Van Halen opened the door.
Yeah.
Right? Van Halen opened the door for that. And U2 being, you know, I just dabble with the guitar. U2 being absolutely fantastic with your six strings. What do you think about Van Halen?
Van Halen's great. Eruption is one of the best guitar songs ever made. I mean, in my opinion, anyway.
Because I get a lot of mixed reviews depending
on
who
you ask.
I'm not
a Van Halen fan.
I'm not a Van Halen fan, but Eruption is, you got to give respect to Eruption.
I mean, for what it was okay. But, like, everybody's like, I'm gonna throw it out like this. I come from a metal guitar playing background. Van Halen was good, but once he did Eruption, that's kind of all he really got known for. Like, that style of that two-handed
tapping.
In the
guitar universe, yeah.
And then.
I feel like that dude, like, invented tap soloing.
But, like. He kind of did. It was a thing, like, you could produce, like, harp harmonics and stuff by doing something similar.
Yeah.
But, like, you've got other guitar players that were doing stuff like that, like, way before.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it was, like, other genres of music. Like, all your metalheads now, sweep picking.
Okay, yeah.
That's
yeah.
cute. Go back and watch Jerry Reed and Chet Atkins do Jerry's Breakdown. And right. Chet Atkins is sweep picking with a clean tone.
Right.
And it is beautiful.
Right.
No high gain, super compressed.
I like to see that, actually. I'm going to look that up.
No, it's amazing. It's one of
sounds good.
Jerry Reed is one of the most amazing guitar players to pick up
just
a guitar.
Clean sweep picking sounds great. Mm-hmm. You
know? It's marvelous because it's that jazz context. And I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I saw Quiet Riot. Did I ever tell you that, real?
No.
Yeah. It was at this club in Bridgewater, New Jersey, and it was like this weird club where half the club was like, you know, this was the early 90s, so it was like half the club was like a techno type situation. Mm-hmm. The other half of the club was 80s metalheads like hanging out, watching live concerts. Yeah. So I go there. And my friends I go there with, they're like, oh, I want to go to the Chuck D's club, see if we can get some chicks in. I'm in this one side, and it's nothing going on. It's this fucking stupid DJ playing. And so I walk across the room into the other side of the club, and it's fucking Come On, Feel the Noise, and fucking Bang Your Head, and all these great fucking iconic songs, you know?
But, I'm throwing the horns. Yeah. I can't help it. Fucking, I love that shit.
Yeah. But yeah. They were great, you know?
Yeah.
They were great.
Quiet Riot and Van Halen were definitely the pioneers of the U.S. metal scene, especially definitely inspired the explosion in the Sunset Strip over on the west coast of the old U.S. here.
Right.
And yeah, and there's something to be said to that, too, because they took what Black Sabbath was doing, and they just said, well, let's clean it up a little, let's speed it up, and go from there. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting, right? Because it's that ever-present, you know, musical yearning for something faster, harder, and stronger, right?
You got to be angrier. Eventually, it's just like doing a drug. It's never enough.
Yeah,
you get
exactly.
You get that first run, and you're like, okay, this is cool.
Right.
Okay.
So when...
Now
when,
I need Napalm Death. Okay.
Right. So exactly. When did that first start? Like, when did the first, like, death, hard, heavy, type music start? Like, who was that? That first started that whole movement.
Well, most people, a lot of people credit like guys like Chuck Schuldiner.
Yes.
Of bringing that to the States.
Yes.
Because prior to, I mean, you had it with like, you know, the Norwegian black metal. And,
well,
and
that, I'm talking all that stuff. But before Norwegian.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, all that stuff. That all started 80s, up there.
Late 80s. Deicide might have been one of the first ones. I don't know. I mean, I'm just trying to like think of those first bands that were on the scene. I know Cannibal Corpse was.
We get like Morbid Angel.
Morbid. That's it.
I mean, Trey Azagoth.
No, you're right. You're
stupid,
right. Because
crazy
when I saw Pantera back in like the mid '90s, late '90s, Phil Anselmo came on stage and Morbid Angel opened up for him that night, and he said, "This who's my idol. This was who I used to listen to growing up." Mm-hmm. So Morbid Angel is definitely one of the godfathers of the death metal movement.
But then you get like it's that natural progression. So like Tom Araya. Everybody knows, you know,
yeah,
Puerto Rican Santa Claus from Slayer.
Yeah.
Everybody's seen the meme. You can be the, you know, guy from Slayer and your kids still don't think you're cool. But he has what we consider the greatest man scream.
Right.
Yeah.
Without pressing into that guttural sound.
Right.
And then it all kind of, it's that natural progression from there of people going, well, this sounds crazy. What else can I do? And I'm sure somewhere at a drunken party, some dude burped into a microphone.
That yes.
Congratulations, yes. You just invented a genre of metal.
Right. That's what it sounds like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like I said, yeah, late 70s, we've got, you know, the Poisoned, Warrants, the Rats, the Dokken's, and the White Snakes, and all that kind of stuff.
Wait, go back. Dokken?
Yeah.
Dokken?
You mean Dokken?
Dokken, Dokken.
Hey, Dokken, you suckin'. Why don't you get off of the staging, you slobbin'?
Yeah, I'm not big on that. But, you know, they were around. They were progressing it, right? And then the Sunset Strip was born. You know, David Lee Roth was carrying it down with his kind of bluesy, a little bit heavier bluesy licks. Because, like I said, we're still over here. They want it harder, faster, stronger. But we're still sticking with our roots with the blues stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Because I don't think anybody back then was doing that in the U.S. was doing that really heavy, like Iron Maiden wailing yet.
Right, yeah.
Yet. It would be picked up, you know, in the future in the 80s by Megadeth and bands such as that. What's that?
the quote-unquote new wave of British heavy metal that was going on at the same time.
Yeah.
So, which, that's what brought over here and got us the big four and bands like
it's
that.
It's funny because they threw Twisted Sister into that British realm to get back to America. Because they didn't want to sign them on in America, so they said, go to Britain. If you make it big in Britain, then you can come back and we'll sign you again in America, and you can go on another tour here in America. So that's what they did. They went to Britain, they fucking kicked ass, everybody loved them, and they fucking came back here, and they were like, oh, okay.
Europe has always been more accepting of the metal scene than America. Like,
right, but it's just kind of weird for an American band to have to go prove themselves there.
Stray Cats did the same thing.
Okay, well, then there you go.
So...
That is a very strange concept.
It is, but it's one of those, like, I don't know, because like you get like Hendrix never really got super popular until he went
to Europe.
Stray Cats was Brian Seltzer.
Seltzer.
That's right.
Seltzer. This is not the Claw.
The White Claw.
Hey, it's no laws when you're on them claws, son. So something else interesting that happened.
Look, now we're culturally relevant.
Yeah, right. We got to keep it culturally relevant for our young listeners, all two.
All you millennials, check it.
All three of them. But something else interesting, and I feel like there was a lot of mixed things that went into this late 70s. Ozzy was fired from Black Sabbath. Remember that, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And replaced with RJD, Ronnie James Dio.
The man.
With the right.
Well, the tiny man.
The tiny man with big vocal cords. That guy.
Not voice.
But
then Ozzy went solo.
Yeah, and
so
I think
fuck
that was
them.
I think that was a mixture of different things because Ozzy was fucking insane, right? And they probably got sick of his shit.
No.
Literally.
Yeah, literally his shit. He was shit and shit everywhere.
Writing his name on the walls in his hotel rooms and shit.
Yeah, right? Everybody gets sick of that. Nobody likes poop. Like Mark tracking dog poop into the studio earlier.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Hey, thanks, at least he found a great way to bring it up.
Yeah. Speaking of
it's
shit.
A nice segue.
Yeah. And he's just like a dang my wife sometimes. It was my fault. It was my fault he dragged it in here.
If you didn't let the dog shit in the yard, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, yeah. If you didn't have dogs, this wouldn't have happened to you.
Fuck those dogs and their shit.
Yeah, it's you. It's your fucking fault, ultimately. But Ozzy was fired from Black Sabbath and replaced by Ronnie James Dio. And I think that was a good move publicly for Black Sabbath. One, because Ozzy wanted to do his own thing. And two, they wanted to keep up with that sound that was blossoming all over the world at that time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that was the loud projected, what? Like wailing vocals that was starting to pick up speed.
Yeah, the origins of power metal.
Right. Correct. Absolutely. And because at that same time, you had Rob Halford, and then you had Scorpions. Mm-hmm. They were out. That was popular. That was selling records.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what people wanted. And I don't think necessarily that Black Sabbath was a band that held strong to what they wanted to do. You know what I mean? They held strong to their original genre.
Well,
you
also had the Flock of Seagulls. Don't forget about that.
Oh, yeah, the Flock of Seagulls.
Totally.
Yeah,
yeah, they're still touring. I saw them. They're coming to Jackson.
Oh, wow. I was kind of hoping they would have died in a bus fire or something.
Their bass player actually taught a friend of mine how to play bass.
No shit.
And I'm just like...
So the guy who taught me how to play guitar was taught by the guitar player from Skid Row.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude. That was a metal. The bass player was a dude named Rachel.
I don't remember
a dude named Rachel.
The guitar player
that could be a children's book.
I just remember he had like one of those nose rings that went from his ear to his nose. Mm. Yeah,
I can't remember his name. Yeah, it was a Rachel something because everybody knows Sebastian Bach.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because that's still one of the greatest voices to come out of the '80s. But
so he grew up next door to him. So
nice.
Pretty cool.
That's pretty rad. Well, there's a lot of changing hands too because you had AC/DC coming out. In the late 70s with, as we talked about offline a little bit earlier with Rick, Bon Scott. And he was there very, very briefly.
Which sucks.
Yeah. I think he was only with them like a year, maybe two.
Yeah.
Late 70s, maybe 78, 79.
Chair around, my ass is going numb. There we go.
Sorry, we'll get you a new chair, Rick.
It's not very comfy.
Yeah, we'll get you a new chair. Maybe you should just do some
squats.
Spend
a week in prison.
Yeah. So, Bon Scott, AC/DC, he dies 1980. That was another very, very heavy voice, right?
Oh, yeah.
Very, very projecting. And that's the thing.
Original.
All these bands, and I wish something like this would come back around now because these guys had some fucking power behind their voices. Like, there's got to be people out there that still have that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there is.
Yeah, his name's Jack Black.
Yes.
Yeah!
As funny as it, dude, fucking amazing vocalist.
Yeah,
very, very good. Very, yeah,
Jack Black doing Zeppelin. fucking immigrant song.
How about that?
So good.
How about that Rubber Ducky doing Zeppelin? That was,
wow. Did you like that? I posted a video on
that was really good, actually.
On our Rock Isn't Dead really Facebook page of a Rubber Ducky.
I think I missed that one on my feed. I'll have to check that out.
It was
Rubber Ducky.
It was a special video.
Yeah, it was I must say. All my videos are special. Don't be crazy.
Like a helmet.
Yeah. Like a helmet. And so we talked about the... so also with Bon Scott dying in 1980, so did John Bonham, which was, you know, another death to another... Yeah, another death to a godfather of heavy metal. Because say what you will about Led Zeppelin, you know, by today's standards, they're probably not necessarily heavy metal.
They helped set up some of the image, the high fantasy imagery that you see in bands like, you know, like Manowar. Yeah. If you like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now
Iced Earth.
Speaking of the actual phrase heavy metal, I wanted to get your guys' take on this. I've heard a lot about this, and I've kind of thought about this as well, the origin of the actual, you know, word and label of heavy metal. You know,
well, it's because they're using heavier gauge strings. Isn't that why?
You think that's why?
I don't know for sure. I'm just guessing that's okay. Why.
I want to see what kind of stupid theories the internet has.
That's
the only one I can think of.
Yeah, a very popular theory that I've heard is, you know, when Easy Rider came out in 1969, the Steppenwolf, get your motor running. Oh, yeah. Heavy metal thunder.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
a lot. That's a big theory. I don't know for sure because obviously I wasn't around.
So heavy metal would be cars.
Yeah, heavy metal,
motorcycles, and, cars.
Yeah, maybe
so anything that's made of metal.
Yeah. So the term.
Let's see what we got. What theories do we got, Rick?
I don't know what this website is, but according to them, the term heavy metal was first used to describe a style of pop music by Lester Bangs in Cream, C-R-E-E-M.
Mm.
It is believed that his inspiration was Steppenwolf's Born to Be Wild, which contains the phrase heavy metal thunder. The actual etymology of the usage phrase of heavy metal is somewhat less certain.
Wow.
Honestly, it makes sense because, honestly, I think heavy metals and I think, you know, like, shit that's going to kill us.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't fit in. It's just poisoning whatever like uranium. Gets here anyway. Yeah. You know, so that makes sense to me because it's like, it's this thing that has a lot of power, but at the same time, you're going to die.
Right. Well, so maybe that is a kind of satirical, you know, depiction of the musical style, you know, because a lot of it, as we progressed further through this conversation, was based around death, brutality.
Right. And then eventually they lost like the heavy, like you really don't have true, like really heavy metal anymore. It's so fractured. It's not even funny.
It just splits out into all the subcategories.
Yeah.
That have subcategories. Dejunct. Of subcategories.
Dejunct.
Yeah, exactly.
I pick up a pancake.
Yeah. So, okay, moving. A lot was fucking going on during the late 70s and early 80s, man.
But you could probably actually do like an entire series of shows breaking metal down by like 5 year blocks.
Easily. Oh, I just don't have enough. I don't have enough passion for it to dedicate that much.
Because I will say
it.
One power voice that's still around is freaking King Diamond.
Right.
That dude.
He's still around.
He's in Texas.
For God's sake.
Which is fucking hilarious because it's. That man in, like, the most gun-toting Christian state in the Union. And, like, I saw an interview with him. And, yeah, like, still all black. Still, I think the face paint's pretty much dyed in permanent at this point.
But I'm like, I remember going into
I would love to walk up to his house and try to sell them Girl Scout cookies.
I remember going into my cousin's room back in the 80s. And he had King Diamond, Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, Metallica, all these posters up in his room before he committed suicide. And I was like, you know, who's that? You know, I was
well,
young.
Thank you for making that connection that they made back in the late 80s.
Well, when they found him after he blew his brains out, they opened up his cassette player. And inside his cassette player was Ozzy Osbourne's Suicide Solution. Whatever.
Oh, fuck.
Whatever. But that's what this
But he was playing it forward. But so, I mean, it obviously story. Wasn't the issue.
But, you know, whatever. No, that wasn't the issue. The issue was crack. So. I remember being little, going in his room and saying, you know, who's that? And then he'd be like, oh, that's King Diamond. And he would explain that, you know, and play some cassettes from King Diamond. And then, who's that? That's Molly Creed. And he would go on and, you know, around the room. And so I just, you know, I never forget King Diamond's face, man. Just, he's got that gnarly fucking paint on his face.
Top hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
It's probably where Slash got his top hat idea from.
His music is sick, man.
Just kind of a funny name.
And he's another one of those guys that has that range that almost like makes your testicles shrivel. Like, how does he do it?
And it's also unique, too, because he's Danish. Mm-hmm. You don't see a lot of like big metal Danish bands.
No, not at all.
You know what I mean?
Not at all.
Yeah, and well, his name's kind of funny too, Kim Bendix Peterson. It's kind of an interesting name for a King
Diamond.
I'd
go with King Diamond.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
That's probably what I would go with, too. But, yeah, moving forward, like I said, a lot of shit was happening in the late 70s, early 80s, especially after the establishment of the popularity of these powerful vocalists, these speedy riffs, these technical solos, and all these different kind of things. Like Rick said, the pentatonic explosion.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So then we start moving into the glam stuff. In the early 80s, 1981, you got Motley Crue with the best heavy metal album of the year, Too Fast for Love. And that was a fucking, that was a movement. Motley Crue was a movement in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. You know?
Even though some say that.
Mostly a Coke shipment, but yeah.
Yeah. Coke and hookers.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a bunch. What's that?
Go ahead, Rick. They tripped me. Like, their stories tripped me out.
Now,
like, Nikki Sixx had to learn how to play his bass parts after they were recorded for the first. I think first three or four albums.
So what, they just had a studio musician come in there and record the bass
lines?
I think
Mick would write the bass lines, and then they would teach Nikki Sixx the stuff.
Really?
Now, I've read guitar posts where people are saying that Mick Mars has the worst fucking tone for his guitar.
Well, see, that's
what makes them.
Well, that's like
Dimebag. People don't understand that.
Like, most people, if you talk to guitar players nowadays... Especially the younger
Dimebag
generation.
Has this high trebly.
Well, no, it's what he does. It's a scooped solid state Randall until he went to the crank warheads.
So he's scooping the mids.
But he ran two MXR 10 band EQs in front of it. One of which was a smiley face kind of ish, and one of them was a frowny face. So it ends up creating this weird sound.
Yeah.
But it's his.
And it's fucking monumental.
Yeah, like he's not gonna sound like he's not gonna have that smooth like Eric
Pantera
Johnson,
fucking changed
tone.
The fucking scape for metal when they came out. It was just a fucking. It was like Pantera and Soundgarden came out kind of the same time on Headbanger's Ball, and it was like Pantera's like fucking they fucking ruled.
Yeah,
Soundgarden was cool. Don't get me wrong.
But they're not metal.
But they're not fucking Pantera metal fucking sound. I mean, it was like holy fuck. You know, Vocal Display of Power was one of the fucking, you know, one of those records that came out, you know, and then everybody went back and they listened to Cowboys, you know, and all that.
But still, I love.
And the best, the best part was go back and listen to them.
Cat Scratch Fever.
Before.
You don't, yeah.
No, like, before Cowboys from Hell. Like,
yeah, but yeah.
The album, Power Cat, Metal, back
Cat,
when.
The,
yeah.
Cat Scratch Fever. They did the Nugent cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the best songs on Live 101 Proof.
I was never a huge Pantera guy.
Dude, Pantera.
It's they're one of those bands, it's like. That you either love them.
Now, the Cemetery Gates.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking.
That fucking highest fucking note of all time at the end.
Phil has a vocal range that's ridiculous.
Well, Dimebag Darrell was the reason I picked up a guitar. Him and David Gilmour were the reason I wanted to play guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gilmour, well, yeah. I was already playing before I discovered Pantera. Well, I was dicking around before I discovered Pantera.
Well, I mean, this was, what, 1991?
My first excursions into guitar, somebody handed me the Easy Tab version of the Black Album. Went, hey, if you could learn this in a couple months, you could be in our band. I didn't learn it. I just sang. I was like, fuck you guys.
Yeah, fuck it. Whatever.
I can palm you like a motherfucker.
But
now.
Yeah, so 81, Motley Crue hits the scene, kind of blows up with the glam metal shit. But you had also a lot of like underlying, you know, a wave that was about to hit glam metal. Because glam metal... It didn't last very long.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? It was a couple years.
Because faggots like Poison came out.
Hey. Oh, come on.
Language.
Yeah.
I didn't say faggot. I meant maggot. That's what I said. Maggots like Poison.
Maggots like Poison. Brett Michaels. He's
fucking homo.
He's a sweet feller.
Wow.
That boy. But but you had a lot of...
Hey, let me ask you a question. So do you think that Brett Michaels wears that fucking thing across his forehead because he had that brain thing going on? Or is it because he lost all his hair? I was having that debate with my wife about why he's wearing that.
Probably both.
I just don't pay enough attention to care.
Yeah,
it's not even paying attention. It's just about, you know, noticing like why is he wearing that fucking thing all the time on TV?
Not the band.
Every time I fucking turn my TV on, he's got the fucking thing on his fucking head. Why does he have it on his head?
Why does he have this on his fucking
Holy
head?
Holy fuck! Why the fuck is this going on?
I was gonna say, Rabbi, did I miss something?
Why does this guy have this bandana on his head?
Great, now we're gonna be on a podcast.
There's a fly in my soup.
So, in 1981, other than the glam metal stuff, you started building a little bit of discontent in the metal community, and then you had started having sort of the thrash metal stuff starting to blossom, and even some of the early black metal stuff starting to blossom
thrash
as well.
Thrash metal will be considered what? Anthrax?
Anthrax, Metallica,
Megadeth,
Slayer, Megadeth.
The Kill 'Em All album,
yeah,
for sure.
That was a...
Super scooped frickin' Marshalls with a rat boosted in the front.
Yep. And with black metal, Venom came on the scene around that time. That was sort of the original real heavy black metal shit that was going on. So that's cool. And
I thought Mayhem was the original black metal.
That's the original Norwegian black metal.
Oh,
there's a difference.
Excuse me.
Regular black metal folks don't burn churches and stab their friends and gay guys at bars. But
come on, those guys were the most metal. To give metal a bad name,
I guess, man.
Like, those guys.
Wouldn't the most metal guys be the guys that are like chilling at home and being respectful to
those
their parents?
Those were the guys who.
What? None of the other metal kids are doing?
No, all the other metal kids like. Oh, I wish I could burn a church down. But those guys actually fucking went out and fucking did that.
The most anti-conformist.
Shit. That was the stupidest fucking.
Yeah, well, it's like punk rock. Like, you know, let's go all be non-conformist, like all of our friends.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's like, eh.
Okay. So. Glam metal, we'll nix that. Glam metal's dead. Well, one thing, though, about glam metal, at least for me...
Glam metal never died.
Well...
Just throwing that out there.
It's media interested.
Well, yeah.
Rick puts on some makeup when he goes home. And
yeah.
Dude, I've owned a pair of hot pink vinyl pants, and this was in the last 20 years.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Does every rose still have its thorn?
Indeed.
No, wait. Well, hey. What's the group that plays the glam metal right now? The Steel Panther.
Steel Panther's fucking amazing.
They're funny. They're funny and they're fucking great.
They're the only band that actually has a custom guitar pedal put out that got banned off of Reverb.
What?
The Pussy Melter? Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Reverb's like, no, we're not gonna do this anymore. We're not gonna have it.
I want the Pussy Melter,
dude. It's an overdrive. It's dope.
I am the Pussy Melter.
You know.
But they're so funny, man. And they're musically they're good. They're really good.
Well, but
Satchel P.
And that's one thing to be said, you know, about all that shit, like the extreme, like girls, Pussy Melter, all this bullshit. Glam metal, to me, and something I've always found fascinating about that particular genre, not that I love their music or anything. If it comes on, it's kind of like a Queen thing for me. If it comes on, I'm not going to turn it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to listen to it. Maybe Scorpions or Whitesnake, rarely if I'm feeling powerful while I'm going to get mulch at Lowe's or something. Huh?
No Winger?
Maybe a little bit of that.
She's
too.
Only 17.
Yeah. But glam metal to me created and cultivated the depiction of rock stardom.
Yeah.
Like when some you go ask some random dude or female on the street and you go, "Hey, what do you think about when you hear the words rock star?" They're going to say sex, drugs and rock and roll.
Yep.
That's what they're going to see. And that came out.
And beating your wife.
Yeah, and that too.
Or party like a rock star.
That's right. In the glam metal scene, they cultivated the rock star image.
Mm-hmm.
They did with bands like, you know, Motley Crue and Whitesnake and Scorpions and all those guys.
And Striper.
Yeah. It's
totally excessive band right there.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But so like going along with Mark said, so we'll go along with the glam metal's dead now, and here comes the birth of thrash metal. And I know we're moving really quick, guys.
No, this is a lot
of shit, but
now we're like what, mid-80s?
Well, it's metal. Early 80s. It should be moving quickly.
Yeah, right.
As quick as possible.
Now we
as
just have to figure out
possible.
How to, like, you know,
well, we
palm
gotta,
mute,
we
pedal
gotta get
ease.
For somehow we got in the next 10 minutes we got to get from mid-80s to current.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and thrash metal, okay. So thrash metal's coming on the scene. They're
I was
also
say, you got a lot to cover in an hour. I'm just saying.
Well, maybe we should just wait and maybe we'll do modern metal. For the next episode.
Maybe. I don't know.
I mean, you could break it down, because then you could do modern metal in one. Then you can get into the slower forms of... I mean, it's...
Yeah, the different
all,
types of modern
they're
metal.
They're all their own animals now.
You're right. Yeah. You're completely right.
So. They are. And that's one of the interesting things about metal to me, is there's just so much to it. So many subgenres to it. You know. But early 80s, you've got... once again, you've got different groups of people that are like, well... I like that, kinda, but I want something. Uh-oh.
That's a White Claw.
That's a White Claw.
Black Cherry.
No, it's a Truly.
I'm out.
Yeah. So you've got a certain group of people that's coming on the scene that's discontent with glam metal. They're over the shit. They want it faster, harder, stronger, minus the outfits. They want to focus on the music. Mm-hmm. They want to be fast, loud, and proud, right? And at the same time, you've got this going on in the late 70s, early 80s. You've got the punk movement coming up. Right? You've got the punk movement coming up.
Oi! Oh! Let's go!
That's right. You've got that. And you've got bands like the Weasels and shit like that that are, you know, they're cultivating all this shit. And it's interesting enough, too, because the thrash metal guys and the punk kids, they were kind of... Thrash metal wasn't very known at the time. You know what I mean? It was still a very new thing. Yeah. And so all they knew, it was fast, loud, and it was hard, you know, and it wasn't glam metal. So they were like, I don't really know what to call this. So a lot of punk bands at that time would share the stage with thrash metal bands.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so that caused a lot of, you know, discontent, because I'm sure you guys remember in high school, punk rock kids, metal kids, all that shit. Fuck you, dude. Well,
oh, yeah.
Fuck
well,
you.
It was fun. When you pointed out the fact that almost every metal band will sit there and tell you that the album Earth AD by the Misfits.
Yeah.
Some people consider it the speed metal Bible.
Yeah.
Because it was played so... A lot of the songs were played so fast. I mean, you know, look at Metallica. Almost every picture you can see of them before the Black Album, one of the guys in the band's wearing a Misfits t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm a firm believer that the Misfits wasn't just... And they brought around the horror punk thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? They cultivated the horror punk thing. And I'm full Danzig days, by the way. 100% Danzig.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Graves was pretty good. He wasn't bad. But I mean,
as long as I'm still not a, I still haven't caught on to the Jerry only in the punk rock all stars. But
can we get to the 90s yet?
Nope, not yet.
For God fucking sakes.
Nope, we're still in the early. There's a lot of ground to cover with these guys, man. Metal was a huge fucking deal. Metal was a huge deal.
Continue.
He's got to get to bed. He's tired. He's old. He's tired.
Yeah, he's got dog shit on his fucking feet. He's got dog shit on his feet. He's tired. He needs another fucking White Claw. This guy's full of bullshit.
Go get you a fucking monster, buddy.
So
punch some drywall.
Right. So Metallica came on the scene, obviously. They started around in L.A., and then they moved up to San Francisco, and that's when they started getting big.
Now, is this when Dave Mustaine was playing with them?
Yes. Yes. Dave was with them for a very short time. Dave was with them for only probably about a year.
Yeah.
Maybe two at the most. And he got booted.
I said, get the fuck out of here with you and your heroin, Dave.
Yeah, get out of here with your aggressive fucking attitude, which is strange. You know, I've always kind of looked at the guys in Metallica as kind of prima donnas.
Oh, yeah.
Especially
definitely.
Lars.
Yeah, Lars and James kind of definitely were
super prima donnas.
Like what they did to Newstead throughout his entire run with that band was bullshit.
Oh, yeah. They dicked him around fucking hard.
Like they'd
the
cut
time.
Him completely out of the mixes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Wouldn't let him have side projects.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah, and then at this time as well, Dio was going solo as well when he released Holy Diver in 83 as well.
What was Newstead's side project? Something bots or toys? Or
Tots? Bots for Tots?
He did, what is it? Was it Echo Brain? Was that one of his?
No.
I don't know. I'm not super familiar with his side.
I know he got involved with Voivod for a little bit, too.
Mm. That might have been.
That was fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, Metallica, you know, moving forward with them, the LA thrash metal scene was absolutely fucking huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was gigantic. You know,
now, did Metallica come out of LA?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
didn't know where they came out.
Yeah, they came out of LA, and I believe Slayer did as well.
No, I think Slayer was more of a New York band, like because they pulled a lot of their influence from like the New York hardcore from that era.
Were they? Let's see. Where did Slayer originate?
There was a cool metal band I used to go see
Buffy.
A lot. Called Surgery.
Buffy, Joss Whedon. That was a joke.
Oh, I was going to say what?
It's a horrible joke.
They're from fucking Sweden?
Oh.
Well, now I have to look that up before we go any further. I have to look up where Slayer's from because I don't necessarily
Anyhow,
know.
Anyhow, Slayer is from Canada. So here we go.
Whoa.
Next.
Whoa. Trapped in purgatory, eh?
No, they were not.
People think we're from Canada and we're dumb, eh?
Oh, Lord. So thrash metal. Were you into thrash metal in the early 80s, Mark?
Metallica, yeah.
That's it?
Yeah, I wasn't a Megadeth guy. I wasn't into...
Nope, Slayer's from Huntington Park,
Slayer,
California.
That's how I was just pulling
I
it up.
Never really got... The only Slayer song I ever really got into was Seasons in the Abyss or whatever.
Yeah.
But that was the only song that I really liked from them, honestly.
And they really didn't start off, because Slayer's got this big depiction and big stigma of being a satanic band. You know, obviously, because in their later artworks and their albums, it's, you know, they're talking about hell, you know, raining blood.
Oh, that's where the anagram came from.
Yeah, they got the anagram on their shit, but that was a marketing technique. They really weren't about that, but people started making them about that. So like, fuck it, yeah, we'll be about it.
Mm?
We'll be Satanists. Yeah. Sure,
we'll grow our goatees down to our knees.
Do you mean pentagram? Anagram's like a lettered thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
The pentagram.
Yeah.
The pentagram.
You said anagram, and I'm like, wait, no, anagram's like when you switch letters.
No, I said
around.
The pentagram.
Oh.
You know,
I'm old.
The star with the circle around it.
Yes. Too many years of standing next to loud, screaming amps affected my hearing.
That the witchery uses.
Yeah, we'll go out back and make ourselves an Anapenna Monopiagram.
Anapenagram.
After this.
A dodecahedron, guys. A dodecahedron.
Right. So thrash metal came on the scene. They were gaining popularity. And then, so moving a little bit forward, there's something I want to talk about before we go. We're coming up at the end of our show, but we'll do another episode to finish up the metal scene.
No, we need to, for real.
I want to talk a little bit about these Norwegian black metal guys. I do. I really want to talk about this.
Especially the mayhem.
Mayhem.
Oh.
Motherfucker. These guys were absolute, the like depiction of metal. I feel like that Brandon Small Death Clock show was actually formed around these guys.
They were historic, man. I mean, they were
Holy shit.
They were doing the things that all the metalheads always talked about.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and I think that's where it all came from.
The murder.
Yeah.
The mayhem.
Yeah.
The church burnings.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
because I don't necessarily love the music. You know, it's real crunchy. It's real low toned. It's real fast.
Terrible.
You know, and they love that though. I know, like part of Mayhem's story. You know, the Euronymous, he started his own record label, the originator of Mayhem and the originator of Norwegian black metal. He started a record store and his own record label called Hell, and he produced this guy Varg or Christian, depending on, you know, what name you want to go with, produced his band.
The Count
produced his band Burzum's album, their first album, and they purposefully went into the studio and chose the absolute shittiest equipment they could possibly use. Like they chose the shittiest small Marshall amp.
They said, no, we don't want all these microphones.
Right.
We just want one microphone in the middle of the room, and that's all we want.
Right, yeah. And on a couple of his songs, they were like, we want the shittiest microphone you have, and it was a headset microphone. Like a telemarketer headset microphone that they recorded a lot of these guys' songs
on. That's fucking metal.
Yeah, that's super fucking metal.
Because,
that's,
I mean, there's
the
nothing
metal.
Fucking more insane in this world than a telemarketer.
But these guys, like when you think metal, when you're like, oh my God, Satanism, metal, violence, murder, these were the literal depiction. It was a band called Mayhem. They're out of Oslo, Norway.
They put makeup on.
Right, and they were also the first people to start wearing the corpse makeup.
The lead singer dead, committed suicide.
Yeah,
and then the guitar player decided to go ahead and take pictures of him after he found the dead body.
Yeah,
and then take pieces of his skull and make necklaces, and then use that as, this is what we're going to use as our, what would you call it?
The album art?
No. The necklaces that he made.
Oh yeah, that's
out of
like
the guy's
little
skull.
Yeah, the tokens. Totems.
If you're going to be in our band, this is what you have to wear around your neck.
Right.
I mean. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Who thinks of that?
Yeah. The guitar player, Euronymous. So their original lead singer's name is dead. And Euronymous was over visiting his parents or something. And he comes back to their house where they practice and all that. And they found the lead singer dead. He had slit his own wrists, slit his own throat, and blew his brains out with a shotgun.
That's dedication.
That's metal.
That's metal.
Yeah.
And rather than call the police, the guitar player, Euronymous, moves the knife around, moves the shotgun around so it's laying next to the body, takes a picture of it, picks the skull fragments from this kid's head, makes necklaces out of them, takes pictures of it, and that's their album cover.
Fucking crazy.
For their first album, Mayhem's first album.
Yeah. That's
what
Norwegian
in the
black
absolute
metal.
Fuck, dude?
So fast forward to, you know, he's the...
Oh, the church burnings?
The church burning.
Yeah. So he creates this record label. He opens up a record shop. And then so some of the members of their black circle, their little crew or whatever they had, started burning churches all over Norway, which is absolute insanity. And then the guy that Varg, that Euronymous,
the bass player for Mayhem
that they adopted later, had ended up killing Euronymous. Ended up going over to his apartment.
Killing the guitar player from Mayhem.
Yeah, ended up going over to his apartment and stabbing him 23 times and eventually sticking the knife in his forehead and leaving him there.
And there was other murders. And
yeah.
These guys were just like, holy fuck, you're out of your mind out in Norway.
Yeah.
But you know, have you ever seen any documentaries about Norwegian prisons?
Mm-mm.
So Norwegian prisons are super fucking laid back, dude. You can have a TV, a microwave in your cell. Like, I mean, there's no cells. It's kind of just like you're just like roaming free. Like, they're laid back.
Far out, man.
Yeah. And in Norway, guns are illegal. You can only have knives. So, well, anyway.
That's why everybody's getting
wrapping
stabbed.
It up on the black metal scene. Are we doing the album review of the week, or are we not?
We'll do it out. We'll do it next week. I want to give the album another week to marinate. We're gonna talk about Tool's Fear Inoculum album. Rick hasn't had a chance to listen to the whole thing yet, so we're not gonna spoil it for him.
I got a fanboy.
Yeah, right. So anyway, thank you guys for stopping by. As always, if you hate, like, or you're gender neutral about what you heard, send me an email about it, willywhitebread69@gmail.com. Stop by our Facebook page, Rock Isn't Dead, It's Just Sleeping. We want to thank Renegade Rick Lane for coming over and hanging out for the evening.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we're going to continue with the metal stuff, because I don't think we have enough time to cover all the ground that this monumental genre
Absolutely
has
not.
Covered in
Absolutely.
U.S. music history.
Yeah, we got to continue that.
So stay tuned for next week, guys. We're going to look a little bit deeper into metal. And thanks for stopping by.
Later, guys.
Later.